Please give a warm welcome to John.
I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic. And I probably was an alcoholic long before I ever had my first drink, because I ain't wrapped tight. As they would say in Scotland, I was a couple of sandwiches short of a picnic, and I knew it. With what I know now in AA, I can look back and well, no wonder my parents drank if they had a kid like me. But I was lucky because my parents were very different types of alcoholics. My father was the Archie Bunker type of alcoholic. My mother was a cross of something between Lucille Ball and Phyllis Diller alcoholic with a good deal of Irish Catholic martyr thrown into it. You know? So I had it coming to me. And I inherited every bit of it. However, growing up as a kid, when you see the fights, the yelling, just the absolute chaos and misery, you say, I will never do that. And I meant it. And then I remember the very first time I had a drink. All of a sudden, I was no longer shy. All of a sudden, I was gifted, a little slow, but you finally got there, and brilliant and wonderful among other things. Steve, I'll draw you a picture later, and we can. All right. And it was marvelous. But by the way, the taste of the stuff was kind of stinging and bitter, but to me, emotionally, it was so sweet and soothing. And typical of alcoholic, I wanted it more often, and I wanted more of it. And when I had more and more, that was still not enough. Now, I went to a certain Jesus school that said, basically, if you like it, it must be a sin. So it was very simple, you know. And I had, unlike a lot of people in AA, I didn't have any problem with God. I didn't have any problem with Jesus. I did, and still do, have a problem with some of his so-called friends. but that wasn't the issue. My drinking took off, and typical alcoholic, I went from beginner's course to graduate school. All right? Now, then, when I was getting, this disease can hit anybody. And so when I was in Jesus school, the state of Florida had this thing, and they were going to start a new course, and they wanted a statewide network of counselors to fight alcoholism. And somehow or another, they came up with my name. So I went to the course, me and my friend Bob, and Bob was in a wheelchair and weighed about 87 pounds, but one of the few people who could outdrink me, and I was not a wimp. So I'd carry this poor little drunken thing, and we would, after school, we would go hit the bars, and we got blown away and blitzoid every night, and then I got my little state of Florida certificate as an alcohol counselor. So I had God, the Pope, and the Church telling me, it's a sin, you'll go to hell and burn. And then I had all this knowledge about the evils of alcoholism and the disease concept and everything else, and went through all that stuff and said, oh yeah. And then, as we alcoholics can do so well, I did a geographic. It was called Join the Navy and See the World. And by the way, they'll pay you well. And I drank so well and so much, I even got promoted a couple of times. So this is just my type of thing. And I drank nothing but scotch at that point for roughly 25 years. Drank nothing but scotch. Then I finally got orders to Scotland. Thank you, Jesus. It's a miracle. But you see, by the time I got to Scotland, my drinking was truly so sick that even I could no longer lie to myself. One of the first things we have to do in recovery is to be honest. At least honest with ourselves. We can lie and BS anyone else. But at a certain point we know, I got it bad, and I got it permanent. And that was the first thing. So when I arrived in Scotland, my drinking was already over the top of the chart. And I went from bad to terrible. And so this one night I had a Scotsman over, and in order to show that we were gentlemen, we had a few drinks before supper. Because gentlemen do that. To show we had some couth, we had wine with dinner. And in honor of Robbie Burns, we had some Drambuie and Lacanora till the usual time of 2 or 3. Until I finally poured his drunken ass into a cab and he went home. Because he didn't have a license, they took it away for DUI. Now, if they take your license for DUI in Scotland, you got to be bad. But something different happened that night that had never happened to me before. Because for all the years leading up to that night, my prayer had been, God, I want to drink, but not turn out to be like my parents or like them. And then my prayer was, God, help me just drink like a gentleman without vomiting on someone's cat. And then my prayer was, God, help me control it. I want to have just 2.3 drinks like anyone else. But of course, before I left the house to go anywhere, I'd have 3 or 4. But they were 3 or 4 of my own measurement. Never owned a shot glass. I mean, that was for wimps. You know, you go boom, 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 boom. But that night, whatever it was, I just said, God, for the first time, I want to stop. I want to stop fully and completely right now. And I realize even though I'm saying this right now, I'm once again blitzoid. But there's one sober cell left in this wet brain. And I'm crying out, help. I only learned years later that in the program we call that surrender. Mine was desperation. Because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I woke up every morning for years. And it's like someone just hit me across the face with a shovel every morning. That's how I woke up. Absolute startled, fear, panic. First thing is, where am I? Whose bed? Or who else is in the bed? Well, I thought I was the only one. If you come to naked, laying in someone else's dry bathtub, this is only a theory, you may want to reevaluate your drinking career. If you come to in a blackout, while sitting unclothed on top of a barrel tile roof around 2 or 3 in the morning, and you come to all of a sudden and you turn to the person next to you and say, excuse me, how do you spell your name again? Then you need to rethink your career as a drinker. I didn't. See, and as an alcoholic, I always had an excuse. It must have been those old ice cubes from the back of the freezer. Or those cheap neighbors brought me cheap scotch. You know, never the fact that I drank Well, in a big way. So something happened that night that made me just surrender. And something else happened when I stopped trying to control it myself. So the question I had to ask myself is why, if I, you know, believe in God and church and bingo and Pope and all the other good stuff you're supposed to do, then why is this happening to me? Well, the answer is, I'm an alcoholic. And spiritually, the answer is, God wasn't doing anything to me because I was sitting on God's throne. I still wanted to be in control. And control is an absolute myth. Myth. You know that if you ever had a dog or raised kids. All right? You try to tell them something and they just go, it's not going to happen. All right? So the real issue wasn't with God. The real issue was me playing God. That's the reason it didn't work. So in Scotland, and then also the next couple of years, to make a long story short, 3.5 years later, I had not had a drink. And that night, God took that thing out of me. Any type of urge to drink left me after a quarter of a century, absolutely evaporated. And I was full of gratitude. I was also full of a few other things, like rage, anger, hatred, resentment. I mean, they should have tattooed unfit for human consumption right across here. You know? 3.5 years later, this God of surprises makes me the senior chaplain at a Navy hospital that just happens to have an alcohol rehab unit. And so the psychiatrist who's in charge of that program comes down to interview me. A gentleman of my dignity. And he says, do you have any particular issues about drinking or not drinking or alcoholics? I said, no. And he said, well, do you mind if you just kind of talk about some of your own history? So I told him my history, where I used to drink and got drunk all the time. And 3.5 years ago, just said, God, I want to stop fully. And I have. Now, this will be on tape, so this is the word he's going to have to bleep out. But he basically said, that is a effing miracle. In your trade. He says, and I'm glad it happened to you. But for the rest of us poor bastards, we have to go to AA meetings. Oh, okay. He said, now, before I unleash you on my patients, all I ask you to do is to go to 3 AA meetings. You can do them the same day, same week, take a month, whatever you want. Here's the schedule book, go for it. So, being a nice guy, I wanted to help out those people. So I went to my first AA meeting, and I was the only one who didn't have a prison or jail record. I went to the second meeting, and I was the only one who'd ever gone to school beyond high school. So that's proof I'm not an alcoholic. Because when the psychiatrist asked me, he says, are you an alcoholic? I actually said to him with a straight face, I used to be. And he just kind of smiled and he said, uh-huh. He said, if you had a leg cut off, would you say that you used to be an amputee? I said, no. Then guess what? Then you still are. Well, oh. Well, so I didn't like him. But being a man of my word, I went to the third meeting. And the third meeting, they didn't even mention alcohol. They mentioned things like low self-esteem, anger, never feel like you fit in, knowing that they're out to get you, and a whole bunch of other things. And I thought, well, you know, I did say 3 meetings. But I might come back to ask some of these old guys just for a few pointers and then wrap this up and move on. And that's what I've been doing the last 20 years. I still need a lot of pointers. I remember at that meeting, and of course, with all the genteelness that AA members can muster, they say, "Well, are you an alcoholic or not?" And I actually told them too. I said, "Well, I used to be an alcoholic." And well, they did the same thing. They just laughed. And there was this one lady there, Katie. Katie was about 4.5 feet high and about 4.5 feet around. And Katie and the elders of this group had a meeting and decided that I should be the coffee guy and a gentleman of my dignity should empty ashtrays. And by the way, they didn't even ask me. They said, "You need to do this." I said, "I don't think so." I said, "Trust me, you do. Just do it." And I did. So I get there early and I'd set up the coffee just like it was done tonight. At this one point, Katie came in and says, "You know, you do a really good job and people like the coffee and the things are cleaned up and everything is set up nice and early." And I immediately start to run it down and say, "Oh, no, it's just nothing." And she put her little finger on my mouth and she said, "The appropriate response is thank you. Not to run yourself down or not to make little of it, but just to say thank you." Now, 40-some years old and 4 college degrees later, I didn't know that. Because you see, my alcoholism has about that much to do with drinking. It's got about that much to do with twisted and broken thinking. And then comes that first time in a meeting, I actually put up my hand and say, "Yes, I'm John. And I'm an alcoholic, period. Not comma, but used to be." And there's a whole other thing. Then I started working with that psychiatrist, because I was too damn crazy for a normal sponsor. As a matter of fact, that man still calls me today. "How are you? What have you done? Who have you pissed off? How many meetings have you been to?" So I started doing that and really got into AA. Why? Because it had a lot of answers. It had a lot of answers for why I was angry. It had a lot of answers for my paranoia. Although sometimes they are out to get you. It gave me, well, a lot of answers to life's questions. So I like to tell church people that Jesus saved my soul, but AA saved my ass. And it's absolutely true. But you see, being in the Navy, coming here and going there and moving. So when I moved to San Diego, I found 2 meetings that were to my liking and to my schedule. And then sometimes things would happen. Like, I would be a bit too tired. Or sad, but you don't understand. Because I'm different. And so my AA attendance became less and even more sporadic. And then at a certain point, everything in my life, like, you know, work, family, friends, all types of stuff, just to kind of, all the little wheels were falling off my wagon. Wasn't drinking. Had no desire to drink. A couple of people wanted to murder, but didn't want to drink. So I call my friend and say, "Poor me, why is this happening?" And he says, "This is happening because you are attending AA and you are not working the program, working the steps, working with a sponsor, working with newcomers." He said, "You go there just in time and you leave just when it's over. And you put a buck in the basket." He said, "You have been on borrowed time and I'm damn glad this stuff is happening. But what should I do?" Go to a meeting. Go to one every day and get a sponsor. But you mean like I'm a newcomer? Exactly. Exactly. Because you see, it makes no difference if we got 21 years or we got 21 hours. All we have is this one day at a time. So I started attending a meeting, and I'm very glad tonight that a whole bunch of my Huddle family are here tonight. Thank you for being here. And so I started hitting some noon meetings just to kind of check that stuff. I mean, that's how desperate I was getting, you know. So I hit some noon meetings, and then I found this wonderful guy, a stately, elegant gentleman with a tapered beard, looked like an English poet or a philosophy teacher at the university. Plus, he had a cane. And he would sit in that first meeting I went to with his hands on the cane, and he would pontificate with this AA wisdom. And it says, if you want what we got. Oh, I wanted what this guy had. So I asked him at the end of the meeting, I said, would you be my sponsor? And he says, well, you know, I'm getting up in years and I'm not taking on new guys anymore. I says, no, I've been around for a while, but I need to go through the steps again. He says, well, tell you what. Tomorrow after the meeting, give me a ride. We'll go back to my place and we'll talk about it. I said, okay. So the next day at the meeting, the topic happened to be about the difference between religion and spirituality. And religion, of course, is what the group says. You know, the Pope or your grandmother. Now, there's a real authority. Your Pope, your grandmother, the head rabbi, the head imam, the holy wizard, whatever he or she is. And they all got rules about you got to do this, but you can never do this. This one's good on a Thursday, but you go to hell if you do it on a Sunday. And so religion is the group. And they all got the rules, all right, about what you can drink or wear or who's on top, who's on bottom or whatever else. Going too fast for you, Steve. So, whereas a piece of absolute wisdom is how AA steps out of that fight. There is no fight. They step out of it completely and talk about spirituality. Where you stand in your own head or heart, whatever you have, with your higher power, whoever he, she, it, or them is. And there's no one standing on the sidelines saying, yep or nope or going to hell or anything else. So the topic that day at this meeting at the Huddle was the difference between spirituality and religion. And the sweet, kind source of wisdom that I had seen the day before just started to foam in the mouth and go crazy. He said, I'll tell you what religion is. It's just so much bovine droppings and lies and power and money and manipulating people, trying to scare them. And he says, and I know this from the inside because my father was a priest in a certain church where they're allowed to get married. He says, not only that, he says, but that man was such a vile, mean, drunk, and alcoholic. The only place that would hire him was the Navy as a chaplain. So that day, I put him and his beard and his cane into my car, driving him home, and he says, well, John, tell me a little something about yourself. So, well, remember what your father did for a living? Oh, yeah, that useless SOB, he was a priest. Can you imagine someone being so damn stupid? I said, well, actually, I can, Al. I said, I'm the other type of Catholic priest. He said, oh, I'm terribly sorry for insulting you. And whatever. I said, oh, no, that's quite okay. That's quite okay. And by the way, he had been earlier in his life, a lifelong agnostic, too. And by the way, he had some life experiments. He married eight times But as he hastens to eight, it's not quite that bad because it only involved six women. Some he had to marry a time or two just to make sure they really were that good. So this was an interesting trip to his place, which is only a mile or so away. And I said, "So Al, remember your father, the priest, you remember what he did for a living?" He says, "Yeah, he was in the Navy, the only one who would hire him." I said, "Al, I just retired as 20 years as a Navy chaplain." He said, "He said, this is over. I've ruined it. You can just drop me off here and I'll walk home." I said, "Oh no. This God of surprises has like custom made this thing. And friends, that would not happen anywhere in the planet except AA. Except AA. We are an absolute living miracle, each one of us. Now, the only thing that's more miraculous than that is you fill a room full of alcoholics. And by the way, here are sick. And it's the only place where we get healthy. We only get healthy among our own. And in AA, whether it's through someone in your home group or a sponsor or a colleague, only in AA can someone tell us something and it's not crushing or devastating. It can be a big, heavy piece of bad news. But only here do we have the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness to hear and accept it. And there's something absolutely marvelous that happens. There are a few places I go with anything that I do. But whenever I go to an AA meeting, and I've been to some in foreign countries where I didn't speak the language, but I still walked out with that thing that we all want. Serenity. Feeling right. With me, my higher power, and with thee. And this is where we do it. This is where we do it. So the message on all I want to say tonight is our prayer is the same thing. It's that prayer that comes deep down from within our heart and soul, more specifically, sometimes precisely out of our pain, our hurt, or our suffering. Because my drinking had gotten to the point where if someone would have come up and said, "I'll give you $1 million, or a bullet through the head," I would have gone, "So what? I don't feel that way, and haven't for years and years, courtesy of what I have absorbed in AA." When you get to be a certain point, you start to take more and more pills, usually because the doctor just says, "Take it." So I take pills. I don't know what the hell they are. There's a green one, a yellow one, and a blue one. You know, and there's a little purple and blue one. And I just take them. But whatever good they're supposed to do, it wears off. Because the next day, I've got to take the same seven pills again. Well, that's the way it is also with the other part about me that is real sick. And so we have to get our daily dosage of AA. We say in the Lord's Prayer that so many people use in AA, "Give us this day our daily bread." Well, for us, our daily bread is our daily AA stuff. You know? And this is where I get it. I get it from my faith in my church in one way. And I get it from AA in a different way. One is not better or superior or inferior to the other. Again, part of AA wisdom. It says AA has no opinion on outside issues. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor supports any cause. That's what AA says. Unfortunately, I do have opinions. I do have causes. And there are certain people or things that I don't like. But it's AA that checks me on my stuff. And so I can say now, as I did like 17 years ago when I started going to AA meetings, you know, I used to be an alcoholic. And it's true. But now I say it only in the present tense. I am an alcoholic. But with the help of each other, we can do this thing and continue to have some peace and some serenity. So, thank you for those who stayed awake.